on capetalk.co.za,
on the app,
on DStv channel 885,
and across the city on 567 AM.
Join the conversation.
This is Cape Talk.
Sometimes we need to give credit where credit is due. And this week, UWC will be hosting an honorary doctorate and gold medal awards event. And some of our favorite individuals who have selflessly fought for a better future for all South Africans will be celebrated in a very special way. One of them sits with me this morning, theologian and activist Dr. Alan Busak, and more Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman, and a number of other people will receive these awards as it happens on the 30th of November. But with me this morning is Dr. Reverend Alan Busak. Doc, it's nice to see you again.
It's nice to see you, Zane. Thank you for having me here.
Have your children called you out to say, Dad, you're wrong? But your kids are nice and big now. They should be married by now already.
Well, some of them are married, but children are children. They call you out when it's necessary. I found it actually quite an experience in my own personal growth. It's nice when the kids are small, but for me, it's wonderful when they begin to think for themselves, to reason for themselves, to question things, and not just on issues, I want this, and you say, no, you can't have it, but really some deep discussions, and where you differ on fundamental points of opinion, and so the question of seeing, can we get somewhere with this argument? I've always said to my children, when you tell me something and you say, I don't want to do this, just don't say, please tell me why. If you can give me reasons, then you and I can have a conversation. And I found that as grown as the children grew older, and it's wonderful.
It's incredible when you create this, when your children are older. You know, my eldest one always runs to me instead of running to her husband. So I always tend to have those discussions, and I say, "Khala yo mantu, no, but you're my dad." The University of the Western Cape has honored you with an honorary doctorate, or will be honoring you on the 30th with this particular honorary doctorate. I was actually very sad to note this morning, Doctor, in the space of what you've done for this country, where we've come from, where we were, at Belhar High, where I was, and in Manenberg, where I was teaching for many years, where we ran from the rubber bullets and where we actually had to run from the Caspers and everything like that. I was amazed to see that you have 14 honorary doctors from various universities all over the globe, and this is the first one from a South African university. Why did it take them so long?
Well, that's a question you have to ask UWC themselves. I mean, I know that, if I remember correctly, this thing goes through a certain committee, and then they make a recommendation, and then the Senate has to say yes unanimously, and if one vote in the Senate says no, then you can't get the degree, as how I understood it. I'm not sure whether it's still that case. So I can quite think that there would be one or two people at UWC who would say, hey, noch nooit so. And they would have other motivations than those people who tried. I am told, though, that getting this degree was the end of a long quest. There have been people who very loyally and religiously have put forward this request for many, many years. And finally, the situation at UWC has become such that they said, okay, he deserves this honorary degree. Mm.
I remember you in the 70s and the 80s, because my parents had the cafeteria at UWC with the Lakabani Charles and chip sandwiches that we used to feed to a number of students who actually grew up on those things. But I remember you as being the chaplain to a number of UWC students at the time. So you've got a long history then with UWC.
I've got a very long history with UWC. I started in 1963, when I was very young. Did my first year that we call the admission course at UWC, then went to Wellington to my church's theological seminary, and then in 1964 the church decided that it should move to UWC in order to become a faculty of the university. So 1965, I was back on the campus as a student. And then in 1976, I came back on the campus as a chaplain. And of course, 1976 is the turning point of just about everything in the lives of our generation. Mm.
1976, but then there was also 1985. Because I remember when 1985 came around, I was in teaching in Manenberg. There were so many major points, you know, 1976, and then 1980 was also a big
1980
year.
1980 was a big year.
1985, I remember standing on the stairs of Professor Van der Ross. We had to write in January because exams were postponed until January, and we had to write, and you know, even at that time in 1985, they said, no exams, you'll be writing again next year. So all of that turmoil, what do you remember? Because I remember a number of very vivid stuff, and even until now, when I hear, you know, aspersions being made in the public domain about, you know, racist remarks and things, whether it's coming from one side or the other side, it still hurts as much as it does.
Oh, it does, and it's a very sad reflection of where we are as a country, which means that all of the hullabaloo around reconciliation and so forth. My view is that part of the problem with South Africa is that we jumped to things, we jumped over things. We never really had a fundamental, honest and open discussion about our past and about racism and what it meant. I mean, we created the Rainbow Nation before we knew what it was. And we hung ourselves up on that notion of a rainbow nation without working through the pain of realizing where we come from and how that has to be dealt with. My wife has a saying. She says, the problem with South Africa is we took racism and we didn't kill it. We just smothered it and we buried it in a grave far too shallow and far too close. So with the slightest provocation, all those ghosts rise up to haunt us. And I think that is a very, very appropriate metaphor.
Mm. Chatting this morning to Dr. Reverend Alan Busak this morning, and we're chatting about his... the latest recipient of an honorary doctorate from the University of the Western Cape, which will be bestowed upon him on the 30th of this particular month. Does this become extra special, this doctorate, for you, having your relationship with UWC? And, you know, we all drove in Volkswagen Beetles in those years when we went to varsity. Is it any different to the other 14 that you have?
Yes, it is. I mean, the other 14, they are all from abroad and wonderful institutions with whom I have built great relationships. That is true. Yale University is a huge one. Geneva University is another huge one. Union Seminary in New York City is probably one of the most famous theological seminaries in the world today. But UWC is special. UWC is UWC. I mean, that's our home. Jay Scherwell used to speak of UWC looking back as the home of the left. I always called it the home of the revolution. It was left is too amorphous for me, and there are too many people who call themselves left who don't know what it means. But those students, that generation, what they have done and the way that they have done it, I mean, it moves me even today as I think about it. And so within all of this, UWC was, I mean, from the beginning of the coming of black consciousness in the late 1960s and BICO and the awareness on the campus and Adam Small and the walk-off and the students beginning to understand and the link with the student struggle and the struggle of the workers, all in those years until the climax came in 1976 and then in 1983 with the formation of the UDF, yet another climax. And in all of these struggles, the students of UWC were at the forefront of every single battle. That was amazing. That was amazing. Putting things not only on the line, but on the altar to sacrifice what they held dear, not for themselves, but for a coming generation. That's amazing, though.
If you'd like to be part of this conversation, give us a call on 0214460567 or the WhatsApp line on 0725671567. I was fortunate to have been lectured by in history by Russell Botmar. I was fortunate to have been lectured by Jacques Harville himself when he was still lecturing. Nou gee ek my ouderdom weg, but that's fine.
Altyd jonger as
ja. Fanny Son, you know, Richard van der Ross, and a number of other people. And I always say to people, you know what? They told us at the time, this is what was known as gutter education.
Yeah.
But it has produced a number of very wonderful, principled people who actually, and I say this is sometimes what we lack. We had this common denominator that we were fighting, and in the politics today, we seem to lack that common denominator, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but it depends on how you define that common denominator. People say apartheid was the common denominator, but it isn't true, really. Freedom, democracy, equality, dignity, those were the common denominators, and nothing has changed. So if people say today, like I do, the struggle continues today as, and it must be done as clearly and as vigorously as it was in those days, because the crisis is so deep, it's still those common denominators that drive us. And you're still looking for what we were fighting for then, and that students like yourself did so much, the policy or the politics of decency and integrity and honesty and courage and virtue. That I talk about just about it every opportunity that I get, that is still the common denominator. And that is the way that you can test the authenticity of our politics and the authenticity and the integrity of our politicians. And that's why we can hold their feet to the fire, because we knew what it was. We actually experienced. It's not a theoretical thing for us. We know what it was to fight for those things. And those were not airy-fairy ideals. Those were realities. I mean, for me, as real as when a student gets killed and I have to preach at a funeral, that is the reality of the politics we were looking for and that we were fighting for. And so today, when I judge our political situation and I judge our politicians, the thing that comes into my mind are the sacrifices that that generation made. And that's my test stone for them.
We seem to, there's two things I want to ask you very quickly. We seem to at that particular time, because I had done an interview on people in, you know, of that particular time in the apartheid years, and I came upon a little bit of research that I had to do for Ashley Creel, as a matter of fact, and I found that there was very little written at the time about that history.
Well, there's very little written even now. I mean, it's really for the first time genuinely that those specific chapters of the struggle have become part of the studies of our children. I will never forget, not too long ago, maybe 2 years ago, I preached on Christmas Eve in a church in Bel Har. And the pastor is one of those who have been influenced by the Americans, so he did these introductions, very flowery and very long, and praised me into the heavens and so forth and so forth. And then he called me 2 days later. He said to me, "Doc, you will not believe what I'm telling you now. I have a young woman in my church who finished high school. She has one degree. She has an honors degree. She's now doing a master's degree. She tells me that when I introduced you, that she says, I've never heard of this man. I've never heard of this history. Now, how on earth is it possible that somebody can go through high school with 3 degrees behind her name and not know this history? So there is a failure. There is an ideological void left on purpose by those who write our history, by those who prepare our kids for education, to leave certain things out. So I'm not surprised that there are people who haven't heard anything about Ashley Creel, who don't know about Anton Franch, who don't understand what it is that they did for a struggle. And why is it that only certain names are mentioned, but other names are completely left behind? It's that kind of imbalance. It's what I call, Zane, a process of deliberate unremembering. It's not forgetfulness, because they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
But they leave it out for political purposes and for ideological reasons.
I've got Pedro on the line very quickly, Doctor.
Good morning, Dr. Alan.
Good morning, Pedro.
I made this call for one specific reason, and that is to thank you for what you have done for my generation in the 80s. You know, when the UDF was launched on the 18th of August, 1983, I just turned 18 five days prior to that. Sorry, 3 days prior to that. And I was in awe that night, you know, with the launch of the UDF. And I looked at these people, people that is now known as stalwarts, you know. And we really, as a high school boy, I was standard nine at the time. We were in awe. And when you speak of guys like Ashley and Anton, those were guys that we knew. And just to let on that, what you said now, those are guys that we went to school with. So we will not, we make sure that those guys are not forgotten, you know. Where we are today, sitting on the Cape Flats through no choice of our own, going through the daily struggles and so on. But we will remember those guys forever and the sacrifices that they made. But on a personal note, what you did for me in terms of a person, I attended John Ramsey High School in the 1980s up until 1984. I want to thank you today for what you've done and what you've instilled in us, that our freedom and our democracy is supersedes everything else, that we will not be discriminated against because of the color of our skin. And that is what I want to say to you, Dr. You, like so many others during that time, you did something for us as a nation, as a people, that we will never ever forget. Thank you, Doctor. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pedro. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I'm going to keep you over for a minute or two because there's something very important that you. The first thing when Johannes heard I'm chatting to you this morning, he said to me, "You've got to talk about this to Reverend Alan Busak," and we'll chat to you about that. Coming up for just on 11:30 this morning, time for the latest eyewitness news headlines with Graham Rabbanama. Good morning, Graham.
Thanks so much, Zane. Recapping your top stories this morning, and President Cyril Ramaphosa says men are the perpetrators of gender-based violence and it is them who need to change. Ramaphosa was writing in his weekly newsletter, "We called for greater conversation in dealing with toxic masculinity and men's attitudes towards women." And in one recent case on that note, police have arrested a man on domestic violence charges in Philippi this morning. The officers were patrolling the Sweet Home Farm informal settlement when they were stopped by a woman seeking their help with the domestic dispute. We'll bring you more details on that story a little later. To Parliament, where the Public Protector's legal team has now complained to Parliament's Section 194 committee that it's struggling to get witnesses to testify at Busisiwe Mkhwebane's impeachment inquiry. These include President Ramaphosa, Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan, and former Public Protector Thuli Maronsela. The inquiry resumed this morning. That's after a two-week break to allow Mkhwebane to prepare her witnesses. But her lawyer, Dalia Mpofu, says he'll be asking this committee to subpoena those who appear to be unwilling to show their face. If you want to clear your traffic fines online, well, now's your chance. The City of Cape Town is holding a three-day traffic fine roadshow. That's at the Civic Centre on Wednesday, Thursday and Friday this week. And lastly, moving abroad, the niece of Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Khamenei has now called on foreign governments to cut all ties with Tehran. These and other stories at midday or as they happen.
EWN Traffic.
Still those protests along Hindle Road in Bluedance and various roads around that area are shut at Klipfontein, Bardell and Saxdown. On the N2 outgoing, there's a vehicle broken down. That's in the left lane at Lisbeck Parkway. And then on the N1 outgoing, there's a vehicle broken down. That's in the right lane at Platterkloof Road. Please be advised. Traffic signals faulty at Brackenfell and Crace Road and Capricorn Way, as well as in Balville at Tiny Mayor Bypass and Roberts Obukwe Road. And then roadworks are in the vicinity of Fishhook High School. That's to install speed humps in Nelson Road, Orlando Road and First Crescent. They'll be busy until 5 o'clock Monday to Friday this week. If you do have anything else to report, you can send us an SMS at 31567. You can also WhatsApp us on 072-567-1567. That's a wrap of your morning news. My name's Graham Rubenheimer.
On capetalk.co.za.
On the app.
On DSTV channel 885.
And across the city on 567 AM.
Join the conversation.
This is Cape Talk.
27 minutes to 12 o'clock. A very good morning to you. I'm Zane Johnson in for Clarence Ford this morning. Clarence will be back again tomorrow morning between 9 and 12. And we were looking at a number of things during the course of the morning. The City of Cape Town's traffic fine road show. We had the challenging the definition of rape and consent definition. That starts in the High Courts today. Parenting approach. And of course, the unexplained with Bruno himself in studio. And you can catch up with all of this on our podcast section at capetalk.co.za. We're chatting this morning to the Reverend Dr. Alan Busak, and he's a new recipient of an honorary doctorate, make it number 15, but this time it's a special one because it comes from the University of the Western Cape. We're talking about the unforgetting of history, or purposefully unforgetting of history. And then Amy came with this particular question as millennials and as young people who want to shy away and say, why should we be interested in that? Why do we need to know that? And I know a friend of mine brought his son, who had known nothing about South Africa, grew up in Melbourne in Australia for 21 years, but he could never understand his father, because his father would say, this is how I grew up. Yeah. This is the challenges that I went through. When I went to the post office in Belleville South on Castlesflare Road, there was one queue for the other side and one queue for this side. That side, there were chairs. This side, there were no chairs. When we walked on the beach in Strand, for instance, we were never allowed to walk on that beachfront in the Strand area. We had to go to the little clippy section down on that particular side. There were massive boards up there that said, whites only. And once he brought his child back to South Africa after 21 years, the child could understand why his father had reacted in that way.
Well, I mean, that is a real question, and Amy's question is important. Part of the problem is that the generation that call themselves millennials now, and I have my two youngest children are in that group, they are a generation that grew up in a void. There was no public conversation the way it was in our generation. There was no groups coming together, that each one teach one kind of thing that we used to have discussion. When I was in high school and I got apartheid education, Mr. Drummond was my history teacher. And the one thing that I'll never forget, and be grateful for him forever, for Mr. Drummond would give us the Zuur Dik Blou book. I think it was from Jaarsveld, Geschiedenis van Zuid-Afrika, something like that. So he used to tell us what's in the book, and then he would close the book and he would say, that's what they tell me to tell you because it's in the book. Now, if you want to know what really happened, come back this afternoon and then we'll talk history. Now, that's how I learned that there was a different history from the official history that was being told, and that avoided us growing up in that void that millennials grew up. I mean, they go to school expecting, because of the struggle and because of the new government, expecting to be told the truth. And then they find out that there are gaps, or they find out because the past 30 years have been years of many, many, many disappointments. So they become cynical even long before their time. This thing that she says, is this true? There's two ways of going to that. You can say, is this true? Let me test it because it's legitimate to question and question authority to see whether that authority is authentic, and there's a different way. And there's also the question of, I don't believe this anymore. They're lying all the time. Every time this politician opens his mouth, he's lying, so I'm not believing anything anymore. And that is what Martin Luther King called give up itis. It's a kind of a disease. And then you begin to give up on finding the truth. And so the challenge is, can we, as parents and children, as an older and a younger generation, engage each other in such a way that they will understand this is a genuine search for truth. And you can question me. I love it about the kids. I was in Upington a few weeks ago, spoke to five schools, grade 11 and grade 12, and to one school all of Monday morning. So thousands of kids. And I was astonished. They didn't know too much, but the teacher says, this person in front of you, that's the guy you read about in this exam question about the United Democratic Front. And so to be engaged in that level was great.
Mm. This is the one thing Joe said I must ask you. President Cyril Ramaphosa, 2037 Deputy President position, Paul Mashatile, 1,791 nomination, Secretary General Ndumiseni Ntuli, 1,225, the Deputy Secretary General, General Nomvula Mokonyana, 1,779, the Chairperson Stanley Matabata, 1,492, and Treasurer General Benjamin Chauke, 552. Your conversation with Clarence recently, you were chatting about Lindiwe Sisulu.
Yeah.
Are you hoping for her to get this thing from the floor, nomination from the floor?
Well, I mean, what you see there, what you just read, that is so typical African National Congress chicanery. I mean, they cannot help themselves but to be crooks and to lie and to manipulate and to shift the numbers away. All of those men, as if the women did not even exist. Now, Lindiwe Sisulu has now written to the Electoral Commission and laid a complaint. And they have responded in typical fashion, disdainful, dismissing, without going into the substance of her questions. And she will drive this thing as far as I understand. And she will question this thing because she says, we have documentary evidence of so many branches, far exceeding the limit or what they call the threshold that nominated her. How come all of this disappeared? Now, the ANC is used to doing this. They do this with every election, with every list. If there's a person on the list they don't like, or a person that will rock the boat they don't like, or they put in their favorite corrupt crook in the name of that person or in the place of that person, they've done that. So I think, like the many, many mistakes Cyril Ramaphosa and his clique have been doing over the last few years, this is yet another one, and they will be exposed for what they are.
0214460567 and on the WhatsApp line at 0725671567. Hi Zane, I love your guest. I have so many questions. What is Dr. Busak's thoughts on the state of education, future of South Africa, hidden racism, overpopulation in academia, insights, and would be appreciated. A big fan, Angelina from Belleville, close to UWC. I think we're going to be here forever. We have to deal with all of these questions in terms of what Angelina wants to ask us. And then the enduring legacy of spatial apartheid is still felt decades later and seemingly will continue to be felt in future generation, as famously categorized by property. Yes. That's property economist and an academic, Professor Francois Varelli, the 40 by 40 by 40 syndrome, which is the 40 square meter house, 40 kilometers from your job, yeah, with transport up to 40% of your household income. Yeah. We're still there.
We are still there. I mean, and that's what I meant. That we haven't really delved deep enough into what was necessary. We were so on a high with Mandela almost being like a god and South Africa being praised by every Western country without knowing that they are praising us because they knew we would change so very little to the realization of what apartheid really was. The permanentization of apartheid in education, in spatial arrangements for our people, the 40 by 40 by 40 is a wonderful example. Those things have been meant to stay. We have had the one experiment after the other with education, but not one experiment really was an experiment towards equality and towards quality education for everybody. And you have to look at why was that so. And that's why I'm saying we are failing, but we are failing by design.
So in actual fact, the system is not broken. It's just been designed that way.
The system has been redesigned to be broken forever for some people, and for the few who can afford it, now drawn into the new elite and the ruling classes, everything is going to be all right. What they forget, though, is that the vast majority of our people are beginning to understand what is happening, and they will not take it anymore.
Caller on the line, and be chatting this morning to the Reverend Dr. Alan Busak. He is the new recipient of an honorary doctorate from UWC. Good morning to you, and welcome to Cape Talk.
Good morning, Zane. How are you?
I'm good, Mervin, and you?
Thank you so much. It's Mervin.
Mervin, apologies, Mervin.
Good morning, Dr. Busak.
Good morning, Mervin.
It's such a pleasure to speak to you, sir.
Thank you.
My it's not a question, it's a suggestion, and I hope you take it very, very lightly and all thought.
my wife says, I'm one of many, many, many people who quietly contributed towards the struggle and to the freedom that we so carelessly and easily trample upon. And in your name, Dr. Busak, I was one of the guys that was locked up on the 15th of December of June, 1985, when we prepared your visit to the West Coast, Atlantis. Remember that?
Oh, my goodness. I couldn't come that time because I was taken into detention at the same time.
I know. Yeah. We were taken into detention the same night. The same night. We were all in Vitefus.
Well, there you go.
But anyway, this is my thought is, for so many people, even those that have eventually passed on, why don't you at least do accept the honorary degree that you're getting, one of the many 14s that you've received, awards that you've received. Please do accept it, but tell the institution that's giving it to you that you would love this thing to go back to the people, those whose names will never be written on any plaque or any award, and let them raise a wall as the size of Table Mountain for all of us to come put our names on. You know,
that's a wonderful idea. I will raise it with the rector.
Thank you. I knew you would take it in your stride like you normally do. Thank you, Doc.
Thank you, Mervyn. Have a good one.
Thank you so much for the call. Dr. Reverend Alan, or Reverend Dr. Alan Busak, with us this morning. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, sir.
You've stirred my heart in a lot more ways than one for the meaningful fight that we fought those years. And I hope that someday that, you know, the principles of that fight, equality for everybody, you know, education for every single child in this particular, and a better life,
yes.
Just a better life than taking 4 taxis to work in the morning, a better life than the 40 by 40 by 40, you know. I think we need to become serious, and opposition, we need to speak out and create those spaces where we can speak out, because that is the big thing and the key thing of those years. We spoke out and we stood for what was principled at the time, and we held on to our principles.
Yes, we did.
Even if it meant our life.
It did. Yes, it did.
Doctor, enjoy the 30th when they...
Thank you.
And think about Mervyn's suggestion. It's going to be a big wall along...
I'm not sure whether it's going to be a wall, but something has to be done. I think, and UWC is the place to do it. Thank you, Mervyn. Thank you, Zain. It was wonderful talking to you.
Thank you so much.
And thank you to your listeners.
Thank you so much. 0214460567 and on the WhatsApp line at 0725671567. A very good morning to you and welcome to Cape Talk.